Look, payday's awesome, but running payroll, calculating taxes and deductions, staying compliant, that's not easy. Unless, of course, you have Gusto. Gusto is a simple online payroll and benefits tool built for small businesses like yours. Gusto gets your team paid while automatically filing your payroll taxes. Plus, you can offer benefits like 401k, health insurance, and workers' comp, and it makes onboarding new employees a breeze. We love it so much, we really do use it ourselves, and we have 4 years, and I personally recommend you give it a try, no matter how small your business is. And to sweeten the deal, just for listening today, you also get 3 months free. Go to gusto.com/beingboss, that's gusto.com/beingboss.
Hello, and welcome to Being Boss, episode number 73. This episode is brought to you by FreshBooks Cloud Accounting. Being boss in work and life is being in it.
It's being who we are, doing the work, breaking some rules, and even though we each have to do it on our own,
being boss is knowing we're in it together.
I want to pause for a moment and acknowledge that in today's episode, we're talking about a lot of stuff that us creatives can often get scared of, from legal stuff to accounting, which is why we love FreshBooks Cloud Accounting software. It's made specifically for small business owners and freelancers who want to spend less time dealing with the money side of their business, but still get paid like bosses by being able to easily invoice their clients and track their expenses and get everything organized in a way that makes them legit. You guys can try FreshBooks for free for 30 days by going to freshbooks.com/beingboss and enter Being Boss in the How Did You Hear About Us section.
Okay, you guys, today we are talking to creative attorney Autumn Witt Boyd, and we are so excited to finally have a lawyer on the show. Autumn, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I'm so excited to chat with you guys.
Let's launch off this episode by talking a little bit about your background. I want to hear how you decided to become an attorney and how you decided to work with creatives.
Yeah, so it was a bit of a winding road, but I'll keep it short. I went to college thinking I was going to be an opera singer, and that will come up. I know. Yeah. So this will come. We will come back to that. But ended up, I was not good enough, so which I found out very quickly. But switched to majoring in journalism and then figured out journalism was not really a career path that I was excited about. But I really liked writing and research and interviewing people and all of those kind of skills that I got through my journalism training. So law school then became kind of a logical next step. And so I went to law school. I went to Vanderbilt in Nashville. I'm from Tennessee. So ended up at Vanderbilt wanting to be an entertainment lawyer, because I love music, and I thought that would just be a really good fit. So I started down that path, and when I found out what entertainment lawyers do, it seemed really boring, which is they do a lot of contract review, they do a lot of negotiations. It's a lot of, you know, looking at like a 50-page document full of long, boring words. So I kind of switched paths a little bit then and became a litigator, so just a trial lawyer. Out of law school, I worked for a judge for 2 years here in Chattanooga. That's what brought me to Chattanooga. And then just went to work for a big firm in town. And I did all kinds of different trial work. But I'd always was still interested, because I think of my musical background and just being interested in the entertainment industry, I was always interested in copyright and trademark work. But since Chattanooga is not exactly an entertainment hub, we did not have a lot of that work here. So I did a little bit at the firm that I worked for, and then I actually got hired away to work for a really small copyright boutique. So for about 7 years, I telecommuted. So I worked from home for this firm that was based in Colorado, and I did just copyright litigation. So I represented mostly photographers and small stock photography agencies. So they would sometimes specialize in like pictures of animals or scientific photos. So I did that for almost 7 years and traveled all over the country. We litigated all over the country in federal court, and these were, you know, million-dollar plus cases. So it was high stress. It was really fun in the beginning. And then I had two kids. I have twin boys who are four now. And so the travel became less fun and the stress became less fun. So about a year and a half ago, I decided I wanted to make a change, But I had had the benefit of a super flexible arrangement with the telecommuting. So I just could not see, you know, putting a suit back on since I'd been wearing yoga pants for 7 years and sitting behind a desk all day from, you know, 8 to 6. So I kind of looked around to try and see what else I could do and where my skill set might come in handy. And I decided to go out on my own and start a solo practice here in Chattanooga. We didn't want to move. My husband has family nearby. I have family nearby, and he has his own business as well. So we have a really exciting startup scene here in Chattanooga. And so that is where I really thought that I would first start working in. And that was one of the things, like, I kind of started going to meetups and meeting people and figured out that was not as good a fit for my skill set and my background. And about that time, Being Boss came into my life, which I found through Meg Keen from A Practical Wedding. I think she gave you guys a shout out in one of her newsletters. And so I started listening, and I had no idea about this whole ecosystem of, like, the online entrepreneur, creative entrepreneur community. But through listening to you guys, and I don't even think we've talked about this, but I really learned about that, and I got involved in the Facebook group, and my practice just kind of took off in that direction. I started meeting people, and it turned out that I really liked working with a lot of them. It's a lot of young women. I love working with women entrepreneurs. And so in about the last year, I'd say my practice is 98% women clients, mostly in the online space. And since what I do is mostly copyright and trademark work, I can do it all across the country. So it doesn't really matter where people are located. And it's been an incredible journey. It's been really fun. It has been way more fun than I expected when I first started. You guys are way more fun to work with than startup dudes. No offense to startup dudes.
But I love that so much. I had no idea that our tribe, through Being Boss, helped you find your clients.
Yeah.
That's like, that warms our hearts.
I hope
that's
so.
That's why we do what we do. So also, I want to mention that we are one of your clients, that you recently helped Emily and I with our operating agreement, which we did an entire episode on. And we just finalized that, I think, this week, in which we literally made you put in there, like, a don't be an asshole clause.
And I think there's an Oprah clause too, right?
Yes, there's an Oprah clause. Like, what happens if one of us gets invited on Oprah? So that's what I loved about working with you, is that I was able to, I mean, I think that most people think I'm joking whenever I say stuff like that, but you,
it's really in there.
You put it in there, and I really appreciated that. So thank you.
You're welcome. You guys are super fun to work with. You're definitely ideal clients.
Oh, I like it when people say that.
All right. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about attorneys and creative entrepreneurs and why we need one. I've always avoided lawyers and attorneys. I shared this story a long time ago on the podcast about one of my very first clients being a lawyer, and he picked apart my contract to the point where in our first meeting, I cried. And after that, I was like, I will never work for another lawyer again. And it was really hard to get to the point to want to hire someone. And I don't mean to, I mean, I think that lawyers and dentists and even police officers, like, are starting to get bad raps, but you've been such a delight to work with. And one of the things that I loved about working with you, Autumn, and I should just clarify here that, like, Autumn is not, like, we pay Autumn. So this is not, like, a plug for her, because there is no trade or anything like that.
Correct.
But one of the things I loved about working with you is that I never felt afraid. Like, at no point were you like, you could get sued, you could lose the shirt off your back, which I feel like a lot of attorneys do. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of attorneys work from a place of fear because they see how badly things can go. And I certainly have that background as well, being a litigator. So, you know, I was involved in lawsuits where people did things sometimes without even realizing they were doing something bad and, you know, being sued for big dollars. So I think that just in the industry, that's become kind of standard, but I don't think it has to be. And it certainly is not how I like to work with clients. And I've actually done a little bit of sales training, and that's some advice that I had gotten, that I really need to pound into people's heads all the bad things that could happen to make them, you know, sign up for more services. And that's just, I don't know. I don't like to operate from a place of fear. I really like collaboration and planning and strategy. And yeah, things do go wrong. And I work with people on that too. But that's certainly not how I want to approach everything from day one. So not all lawyers are bad.
Okay, so let's say you're a brand new creative entrepreneur and you're wanting to get things set up in a right way. Like, what is the first course of action legally that a creative can take to set themselves up to be protected and legit and on the up and up?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a lot of things that people can do on their own. And so you don't need a lawyer for a lot of what we're going to talk about today. The first thing I recommend is, as you're choosing your business name, is to run a trademark search. And make sure nobody else is already using it. So even if the domain name is available, that doesn't necessarily mean that someone else doesn't already have a similar business with either a name spelled slightly differently, or, you know, they chose a different kind of domain, but their actual business name is what you want. And so I just always run a Google search and then a search of the United States Patent and Trademark Office database, which is really, it's easier than it sounds. You just go to uspto.gov, and then the database is called TESS. It's TESS, and it's free. It's totally free. And that will at least let you know if you're at risk of somebody coming after you for having a similar name. Because a lot of times people aren't ready to register a trademark in the beginning, which is fine, and I don't even think you should. But I hate to see clients who are 4 or 5 years into their business then have to do a name change because they find out at that point that somebody else was already using the name.
Do you guys remember the blog Young House Love?
Yes.
Emily, did you ever read that?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, then yes.
Anyway, I think their names are John and Sherry, and they did like a house remodel blog. And whenever I started blogging, I was really into like all the house remodeling blogs. And I remember they had to change their name a good maybe 3 years in, and they had established a really solid brand under the name. I want to say it was This Young House.
I think you're right. Yeah. And This Old House came after them, right?
Yeah. And they didn't explicitly say it was This Old House, but they were like, I bet you can guess who came after us.
Yeah.
And it's something that we didn't do for Being Boss. We did not look into trademark and who else might have the name. Did we, Emily? I don't think we did.
I mean, no more than like domain searches.
So we're really grateful. So we're going through the trademarking process now. So can you talk a little bit about the difference between trademarking and copywriting? Like, what is the difference there?
Yeah. So a copyright is going to protect, think about content in your business. So like if you created an e-course or an ebook or a movie or a song, a sculpture, a painting, things like that are, they're like creative works are what's protected by copyright. And in the United States, and I meant to say this in the beginning, but disclaimer, I'm not giving any legal advice. So I am a lawyer. I'm not your lawyer to any listeners out there, except I am Emily and Kathleen's lawyer. But anyway, under U.S. law, copyright protection is automatic. So the minute that you create something and you put it in some sort of format that you can access it again, so a computer file or you write it down or you make a sculpture or whatever, it's automatically protected. And if someone tries to copy it, you can go after them. There are additional benefits if you register with the Copyright Office, and you have to do that before you sue someone. But a lot of people never register their copyrights and they never need to. Trademarks are, think about things that identify a product or a business or a brand. So it will protect things like a logo or a business name or a catchphrase. And then there's some weird things like it will protect product labels if it's something that like identifies your product on a shelf. Or certain colors even, like Tiffany Blue, Tiffany & Company, the jewelry company. Mm-hmm. Their blue is a trademark because it's so identified with their brand. And under trademark law in the U.S., you also have what's called common law rights. So just by using your business name or your logo with your brand, you do get certain rights, but they're not as good as if you register with the trademark office. So they kind of protect two different pieces of your business, but there is some overlap. So if you think about like Mickey Mouse, is a creative character. He's part of a cartoon. So he's protected by copyright, but it also identifies the Disney brand. So he is also protected by trademark law. But most things fall pretty squarely into one or the other camp.
So at what point do we get to put a little TM by our name? Like, is that cool?
Yes. To do? So you can put, so for copyright, you can put the C in a circle immediately, just as soon as you create it. You don't have to register it. Anybody can use that. And I recommend the C in the circle and then the year that it's published and your name. So if you're like on your website or if you have a painting on the back or whatever.
Okay. So quick, kind of dumb question. Every year, should you update the copyright at the bottom of your website? Like if you have that in your footer, should you update it to the current year every year or should it be like 2008 to?
Yeah, I would do a span. Yeah, the 2008 to 2016.
Okay.
Because you're going to have stuff that was first published, you know, a while ago.
Right. Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So for trademark, you can use the TM anytime. Anybody can use that as long as it's, you know, something that is identifying their brand or their business. You can only use the R in a circle after you have gotten a registration from the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office.
Oh, so the R circle is like the real legit.
Yeah, that means registered.
Business. I will sue you.
Yes. All of that is optional. You don't have to use any of those.
I want to get like a tiny little TM, like tattooed, right? Like on my tear duct, you know, like on the edge. Wouldn't that be cute?
Why? Yes, it would be adorable. This is my eye.
Emily, do you have any questions?
I think one of the ones that I get attacked with the most often in terms of like getting businesses set up is really like the legal difference between a sole proprietor and an LLC, and when it's time to go big dog with like an S corp.
Oh my god! Yeah, I need to know this right away.
Right?
Yeah, I get this question
this
a lot.
This is like our method of getting free legal advice is just having Adam on the show.
Yeah, no, this question comes up in the Facebook group and the Slack group all the time, the Being Boss Clubhouse. So the LLC is going to protect you from someone suing you from taking your personal assets. So like your house or your personal bank account or your car, anything that you have of value that is not necessarily related to your business. So if you have a business that, let's take a skydiving business, for example, where someone is likely to get hurt and might sue the business. If you are a sole proprietor, they can come after everything you have if they win in court. If you are an LLC, they can only come after things that the business owns. So like if the business owns a building or some property or the business bank accounts. Does that make sense?
Totally.
Yes. Yeah. And a corporation provides the same kind of liability protection. But most of the time when we're talking with creative entrepreneurs, they're looking at an LLC. There can also be some tax benefits to being an LLC or a corporation, but that is going to be different in every state. So I always recommend that people...
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah. I always recommend that people... So I'm a lawyer, so I deal with the legal side. I don't deal with taxes.
Okay, so I do have a question because our accountant... So Emily and I now also share an accountant. And...
We're going to have a baby soon.
I know. We might as well be married. I was doing a podcast interview yesterday on someone else's podcast, and she was asking me about partnerships. And we've done an entire episode on partnerships where we talk a lot about our operating agreement that Autumn, you drafted up for us, but and the decisions that went into that. But I was telling them, I mean, it's legit like getting married. The contract is tight. Okay, but we now share an accountant, and she was telling us that we need to think about becoming an S corp versus an LLC, and that it's time to kind of look at those things. So at some point, do you think, Autumn, it would make sense for your lawyer and your attorney to be communicating with each other?
The lawyer and the accountant.
Usually separate.
Yeah, no, I think as a business grows, it makes a lot of sense because there are decisions that have kind of legal and tax implications, and it doesn't have to be a long, expensive meeting. But yeah, just to touch base and make sure everybody's on the same page with what the goals are. I think it makes a lot of sense.
Another question. If you're a brand new entrepreneur, or you know, you're just starting to work for yourself, or you're a freelancer and you're setting up an LLC, what do you think is the first person you should hire between a lawyer or an accountant? What would you recommend?
Probably an accountant.
Honestly, I found that accountants can do a lot of the things that you would think a lawyer would do, like helping you set up your LLC. That's something that I wish I had done whenever I first started working for myself, is have my accountant tell me what to do, like what they recommend based on how much income I would be making or how I want to be taxed. Because I did the LLC first, thinking I needed that first to then get the bank account, to then get the accountant.
Which you don't need it, right.
Not at all. You can kind of back your way into it. Okay, I have another question real quick.
And a lot of accountants will set up the LLC for you, because in most states, it's a really simple process. There's a couple states where it's complicated, but most places it's really easy.
And that's something I want to point out, is that I feel like a lot of aspiring entrepreneurs get really hung up on this LLC business and opening a bank account, but it's not a big deal. It really, truly isn't.
That will be some of the easiest steps you can take to actually starting and running a business. Like, just filling out that little LLC paper and mailing it in is really kind of easy.
Yeah. Well, and more important than that really is, and your accountant can help you with this, is knowing like what city and county and state licenses you need and like all of that stuff, which I don't really deal with very often, but I think they deal with day in, day out.
And even organizing the paperwork so that you're not getting, like,
your bookkeeping.
Penalty paperwork letters from the state that are like, you're about to be penalized, and it's not true. And I don't know why I get these letters, and it's all because I set it up wrong from the beginning.
Oh, you need a David.
We all need a David.
So, okay, so I have another question too, because a lot of, I don't know if this is related or not, but a lot of creatives have multiple businesses and might have multiple LLCs. But there's also something called a DBA, which is doing business as.
Yes.
Can you help explain some of that? What is that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think a lot of people form multiple LLCs when they don't really need to, when one would probably do the trick. So if you have a couple of different lines or shops or different services that you offer, you can have kind of a parent LLC that covers everything. And then you just file paperwork with the state in Tennessee, I think it's like $20. It's very inexpensive. And you just kind of let the state know that you're also doing business under this other name. And that's all you have to do. And you're covered by the liability protection of the LLC for all of it. Now, the only reason you might want to form different LLCs is if you have like a really valuable asset that you want to put in one company. And if somebody sues one of your other companies, you don't want them to be able to get at it, because that would just keep it separate. But for most creative entrepreneurs, that's, you know, you're not going to have $1 million piece of equipment or some big asset that you need to protect.
Hey, boss. Does client no-shows have you down? I don't know about you, but it gripes my ass to have to deal with a client with poor calendar management skills, forgetting to schedule their meetings with me, and then standing me up when it's time to meet up. No show equals no bueno. Take no shit with Acuity scheduling. Once in my business, I had more no shows than I knew what to do with and was threatening to throw in the towel with client work. But then I got Acuity scheduling, and the ease of scheduling coupled with those autoresponders that go out as friendly reminders that they get to hear my sweet voice that day has my clients showing up like bosses. Acuity has helped me hold my clients accountable so that we both make our meetings and everyone goes home happy. Schedule clients without sacrificing your soul. Sign up for a free 60-day trial of scheduling sanity at acuityscheduling.com/beingboss. Now, let's get back at it.
Perfect. Okay, I have a listener question.
Okay.
This is from Jillian in the Facebook group. Okay, here is the question. I recently launched my company. It is starting as a website that will have a few for purchase downloads to start with, a ton of free content on a blog and social media, but eventually I want to sell physical products and have a storefront and change the world, of course, as most of us do. I bought the domain name for the company, but I have yet to do anything else and am completely clueless on the best path of action to make my company legit behind the scenes. How do I get started? Do I copyright or trademark the name? Do I develop an LLC? What do I need to do at this point? So kind of talking about all the things that we talked about, using Jillian as a case study, what would you recommend from the beginning? Like, what are the steps of action that she should take?
Yeah, so talking to an accountant about whether it makes sense, kind of what her revenues are going to look like, whether it makes sense to file an LLC. At this point, she probably doesn't really need to talk to an attorney, but, and I always try and tell people to think about what could they get sued for. So in a business like this, she is not selling anything physical in the beginning, so she's not going to have like a product liability claim from somebody getting hurt from something she's selling. It's pretty much downloads, so she's at pretty low risk of being sued. The other thing that I would mention that we haven't touched on yet is website terms and conditions and privacy policies. And this is something that is actually really important in the from the very beginning.
Amen.
Yes. A privacy policy is required by law if you are taking people's personal information, which anybody who has an email opt-in on your website, you are taking people's personal information. So you need to have some sort of policy, and it doesn't even matter what it is. You can say, I'm going to sell your information to the guy down the street. You just have to tell people that's what you're going to do. Or you can say, you know, I'm going to protect it and I'm not going to use it for ads. You know, whatever you decide to do is fine. But you have to give people some sort of notice that if they give you their personal information, this is what they can expect from you. And if you're selling products, you're also taking credit card information, address, phone number probably. So the privacy policy is really key.
And I think for us, we started a privacy policy whenever we launched the Clubhouse because it is a forum and making sure that we're protected. So you helped us with that. And
yeah.
I think that as your business grows, your privacy policy will have to grow and evolve with you as well.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, like you can also, for like the early ones, like if you're just getting information for an email list, like you can go really plain language and simple with it. But there are also like little privacy policy generators online that you can do.
It can be a paragraph. It does not have to be complicated.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, and like these little like plug and play ones work really great, too.
Yeah.
But then whenever we did decide to do Clubhouse and like really do something legit where we really wanted to be very specific about how it was we were protecting the privacy or not protecting the privacy. We're protecting it. Don't worry. Of our Clubhouse people, like at that point, it's time to lawyer up and get a legit privacy policy. So privacy policy as a website person, super important. It doesn't have to be difficult, but absolutely get one. And then whenever you start getting legit with the kinds of ways you interact with your community online, get a legit one.
Okay, so back to Jillian, though. So she's wanting to start this website. So
she needs a privacy policy.
And would you have recommended that she had trademarked, like Google the trademark before buying that URL?
Yeah, I would recommend that she do a trademark search for sure before she buys the domain.
But she bought the domain, so maybe now it's not too late to do the search. And if she needs to buy another domain, she can.
Yeah, before she invests a lot in the brand, I definitely would.
Okay, and then what? What's next?
And then what? So the second piece, the kind of flip side of the privacy policy, is your website terms and conditions. And since she is selling, you know, she's got free content and then she's also doing some sort of downloads, the terms and conditions on your website will kind of tell people what they're allowed to do and what they're not allowed to do with the content that's on your website. So her terms and conditions could say, you know, if you purchase a download, it's only for personal use. Or it could say, if you see an image you like on my blog, you're welcome to repost it or put it on Instagram or whatever, but only if you give me credit or link back to my site. And it's optional, but it's a nice way to tell people kind of, these are the rules of my playground. This website is my playground. This is what you can do. This is what you can't do. And that gives you some copyright and trademark protection as well.
Yeah, because I think we're talking a lot about how to protect yourself from being sued, but then it's also on the flip side thinking about if you needed to sue someone else,
right?
What would that look like? What would you want to sue someone over? Or at least send them like a firmly worded letter.
Yeah. And people who have a ton of free content on their blogs, I mean, that's valuable and you should protect it. Just because
yeah,
it's free.
There's a lot of websites that even aggregate and take your content and republish it on their sites, and they're selling advertising, you know, for content that you may not even be being compensated for. They're being compensated for it. So these are things to really, truly think about.
Yeah.
Okay, so I want to actually ask you about suing other people. A lot of our bosses in the Facebook group get really concerned about copycats. And I found this especially with makers on Etsy. So I'm curious, like, what you think about that. Like, what should you do whenever someone's copycatting you?
Yeah. Unfortunately, the way our legal system is set up, it's really, really expensive to sue someone. So for most listeners, it's not going to make sense. And they're probably suing someone who doesn't have the money to really make it worthwhile to sue them anyway. So I always say you kind of take a couple of steps before you escalate. So start by maybe just sending them a note and saying, hey, I saw that you did this. This is really similar to my work. I'm sure this was unintentional, but I would appreciate it if you would, you know, either change it or take it down or whatever. And sometimes it really is somebody who doesn't know that you can't just copy someone, and that will take care of it. If it doesn't.
Well, then let's let that be like a public service announcement to everyone listening. Don't copy anyone's shit.
Yeah.
Like, that's bad news bears.
Okay. I have a question though. This is legit. So in the Facebook group, there are two artists in there, and both I really like and respect. And they both happen to have similar bodies of work at the same time that they were posting at the same time in the Facebook group. So artist A emails me and says, hey, did you see this? And artist B emails me and is like, this artist A is accusing me of copying her and I didn't. And then it's like hard to know who to believe. And I'm not a litigator.
Right.
I don't get, like, the Facebook group is free. I don't get paid enough to referee that. So, like, I guess my question is, I kind of told them to work it out themselves. Like,
yeah.
They're both adults. They need to figure it out. But, like, what about that in a situation where maybe you legitimately didn't copy someone, but
right.
You're being accused of it, or vice versa? You accuse someone of copying you, and maybe they really legit are not, that you guys came up with the same idea at the same time. What do you think about situations like that?
Yeah, it's tricky. So I'll tell you the legal answer, which is under our copyright law, as long as you create something independently of someone else, two people can create the exact same thing. And it is, they both would own it and they both have the rights to keep other people from using it. Now, in the real world, two people are very unlikely to create the exact same thing. So whether maybe they were inspired by the same thing, or maybe they one saw the other's work and didn't even realize that they were, you know, locking it away in their brain. It's really tricky. Unless you have incredibly excellent records of, like, the date that you started this painting and the date that you saw someone else's website, which who keeps those kind of records? It's crazy. So, I mean, it really is, like you said, it's kind of just working it out. If you sue someone, it's going to be incredibly hard to win that lawsuit. Unless it's honestly, a copyright lawsuit is really hard to win unless it's a verbatim copy. So just because two things kind of look alike, that's probably not going to be enough, unless you can prove, like, they came to visit my gallery and then the next day I saw this thing on their website that was exactly the same.
Well, and I think this is also where, like, our mine and Kathleen's don't be an asshole clause comes in for the greater bit of humanity is, like, don't be an asshole and don't steal other people's things because you're not going to win. No one's going to win. And I think I can think of multiple times when, I don't know, like West Elm or something
right.
would like take a creative's idea and mass produce it. And like West Elm didn't benefit because everyone ripped them apart. So, I mean, I don't know. There are just multiple times when I can think of these things happening where just don't be an asshole. And if you accidentally copy someone, just don't be an asshole.
Yeah. And if somebody comes after you and you did copy, like, take it down.
Right.
Don't be an asshole. These two artists, like, if their work is really that similar, one of them knows that they copied the other. I mean, let's be serious.
Or there's a third party out there if they both copied.
Exactly.
I think it's also, like, don't be an asshole whenever you're accusing someone else of copying. And
yeah.
Really having the best assumptions of that person in mind. Not to be Pollyanna-ish about it, but I think that that's going to serve you better. Okay, I have another question.
Go for it.
Because we get asked about this a lot, I'm curious about haters and taking legal action against haters who are talking shit on you online. So, like, let's say, for example, you Google my name, and the first thing that comes up is a forum of haters.
Oh.
Like, that could hurt your career. Or I've recently heard about haters going on and destroying people's book reviews on Amazon.
Oh, my gosh.
So, like, what is your legal – what are your legal opportunities there?
Yeah. So, if it's false, then you can theoretically sue them for libel or slander, you know, depending on the circumstances. It's, again, it's going to be expensive and difficult to win. So you're a little bit limited unless they're copying. I'm trying to think of a different way to attack it. I mean, if they're copying your work and, you know, slamming you, like if somebody put up a hater website that looks like your work or that copies your work, then you might have more of a remedy there. But it's just, it's one of those things that I think ignoring is the best bet unless it really does start to damage your reputation, and then it makes sense to spend. I mean, we're talking probably tens of thousands of dollars to sue someone for libel or slander. So it has to be a big impact to make it worth spending that kind of money.
And I suppose if it's anonymous, like you don't even know.
Yeah.
So that's, basically, yeah. Don't be an asshole. Like, just
and ignore the haters.
Can we title this episode the "Don't Be an Asshole" clause?
Like, I like it.
I do can't too. Wait to see our social media images for this one. It's just going to be "Don't Be an Asshole,"
right? Because I mean, that's it too. Like, you know, we're all in this online space. Like, we're all in this online space and we're all trying to like put out content and do our best. And as long as we are doing it from an authentic place, meaning it's yours, you're not right. copying it from anyone else's, then, you know, and like, and being kind people, not being an asshole, then like there's room here for everyone. But it's when like, it is when trolls just come in and sort of beat down the door or steal your ideas or your art or your words that, I don't know, things just start going to shit. And again, very Pollyanna-ish of me, but can't we all just be friends?
Okay, I have some more, like, legal questions.
Okay, go for it. Well, do you want to go back and, let me just say really quickly, so if you send a nice email and they say, I don't know what you're talking about, I didn't copy you, but it's really obvious that they did, your next step is if it's a copyright, so if it's like an image or a blog post or something, you can file what's called a DMCA takedown notice. And that actually gets filed with their web host. And so you can actually force their domain to take down whatever it is that is copied from you. Yes.
I didn't know about that.
Yeah. And it's another thing. I mean, you can Google it. I could help you with it, but you can Google it. And there's lots of information online. Now, it has to be like a good faith. You have to really think that they are copying your stuff. You can't just do it to anybody. And then if they respond, then you have to sue them. So a lot of people never respond and it just gets taken down, and that's great. But if they respond, then you have to sue them, and most people won't. So it is kind of a limited fix, but it is an option. And it's something you can do yourself. You don't have to have an attorney.
Emily, have you ever had to ask someone to take something down of yours?
Yes, actually. Yes, I have.
Tell me about it.
Oh, man, I forgot about that. A couple of years ago, I had redesigned my website. I think it was right whenever I launched my web design services. And I was looking at my Google Analytics and I had a referral site that I'd never heard of before. I don't remember what it was. I have no idea. And so I went and checked out the website and they had stolen my website.
Like the whole thing?
Yeah. They had copied and pasted all of my code and they'd reskinned it a little bit. So like it was a different color, but like even some of my content was still in it. And I wrote them an email and was like, guys, like, you stole this. My content's still here. It was mine first. Take it down. And I never heard from them. They took it down. That was the end of it.
So I recently had it happen that someone was, Skillshare? Someone on a Skillshare site.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they had taken some of my personal branding images, and they were selling a course on personal branding, which is my expertise, my livelihood.
Using your images.
Using my images. Yep. Like, literally, I remember that. Like, even my face was in one of the photos. Like, there was no bones about it. It was my image. And so then I emailed the guy asking him to take it down. And, okay, here's where it gets tricky is that the guy that I emailed, it was like his graphic designer that had put it together. So it was really the graphic designer ripping me off, not this guy. But and I think that's tricky, too. Whenever you don't know that who you're hiring isn't ripping off someone else. I've also had it happen for a client where another industry or another creative entrepreneur basically ripped off her logo. And the woman who had the ripped off logo as part of her business had no idea that her graphic designer had basically ripped us off. So that's another thing, is just kind of be responsible.
Well, and I've also had scenarios like as a designer where I have clients request that I rip people off. And so that's been, and like, I have to be like, no, that's illegal. Like, I'm not doing that. That's happened a couple of times. And then, well, and we've had someone rip off the Being Boss site before. And that was a fun little, we know about that, just so you know.
I opted into their newsletter.
Right. We didn't send them anything. Instead, Kathleen very passive aggressively signed up for their newsletter and it went away.
Yeah. Okay. So what was I? Oh, I wanted to ask a little bit about intellectual property versus copywriting. So like, let's say you come up with a method or a way of working. Can that be protected through a copyright, which is free and simple and automatic? Or is that something that you need to hire an IP lawyer for?
Yeah, that is usually going to fall under patent law, which is much more expensive and complicated, and I don't do it. You have to have a science background to do it. So what copyright could protect is if you have a method, like let's say the braid method, Kathleen.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, you can... You can register the copyright for that method, but it's only going to protect like the exact way that you have written out the method. It's not going to keep somebody else from coming in and basically duplicating the method, but writing it differently. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you want to protect a process, then that is going to be a patent, and that's big, big, big dollars.
All right. Y'all can have it.
But if you have $1 million idea, it's probably, you know, it's worth protecting that way. But for most of what we're talking about, it is not.
Okay. One of my last questions is at what point in your business growth do you feel like it's really important to hire a lawyer? So for Being Boss, it just kind of felt intuitive. Like the place in which Emily and I were unwilling to go through the copywriting process or trademarking process ourselves, even if we could, like that's just not where we want to spend our time, and we have enough money to hire you. But like, at what point do you think most creatives should hire a lawyer? Like, what are some of the milestones that maybe they've hit in their business?
That was what I was about to say. There's a couple of milestones. So I think it's helpful as you're getting started, if you can afford it. And a lot of attorneys will meet, like I'll do a 1 hour consult, which is not super expensive. And we'll talk about a lot of these big picture type things and some strategy and, just answering questions about getting set up and, you know, here's some things you might want to do this year or next year or 5 years down the road, just so you kind of have a roadmap for where you want to go. And then I think maybe year end of year one, sometime in year two, depending on how your business is going, if you're growing really quickly and you're feeling like you're nervous about either being sued or that your contract isn't really protecting you, that's something we haven't talked about a lot, but I do a lot of client contracts, which I think is one of the most important protections you can put on your business. It's way more important than forming an LLC. I think that can be a good time to make an investment in a custom contract that really covers the way you do business, the way you like to work with clients, so that you've got a really strong, you know, cancellation policy and all the other things that might not be in, you know, if you find a contract on the internet or you borrow one from a friend. And then I think if you're collaborating, like Kathleen and Emily, on a new project, I think that's a good time to talk to a lawyer just to make sure everybody's on the same page and that, you're really thinking about all the different ways things could either go right or go wrong, and that everybody is
thinking
happy.
About all the different ways we could die and who the money goes to. I feel like that's exactly what our entire operating agreement was.
And what happens when Oprah calls?
Yes. The best case scenario and the worst case scenario.
Basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I think, you know, if you just, in your business, I think you'll kind of feel it like you guys have felt it. Like you're at a really, I deal mostly with growing companies. So if you're at this point where you feel like your business is exploding and you can't get your arms around it and you don't even know what to do, then consulting with a lawyer to make sure you're doing what you need to be doing can be really helpful.
Nice.
Oh, I have one more question.
Yeah.
We were approached about more free legal advice. No, but really, I think a lot of people right now are self-publishing books.
Yeah.
And that's like a big thing that's happening right now. And I think that's a really good, important thing to have a lawyer. So, for example, Autumn, I'm about to forward you an email from an agent.
Yeah.
That you can, you know, pay us to look at. But a book agent versus like self-publishing and knowing how we're protected. And I know that a lot of self-publishing processes have kind of the legal stuff built into that process, so you're kind of covered. But is there anything that we should know about, you know, hiring a lawyer whenever talking to a book agent or negotiating deals, for example, or signing any contracts whenever you hire someone, or like that might be another good reason to have a lawyer, is if you're hiring a contractor or an employee, just making sure that everything's covered there. But I also, I'm curious about the book thing too.
Yeah, I would say hiring your first employee or your first independent contractor is another good milestone to kind of just touch base with a lawyer, because there are a lot of employment laws that are very tricky and they're different in every state. And just to make sure, there can be huge fines if you do that the wrong way. So it can be, you know, it's one of those things where you can pay a little bit on the front end and save yourself a lot of money on the back end. But with the self-publishing, yeah, I think anytime you're negotiating a big agreement, it can be well worth your money to talk to a lawyer, because a lot of things are negotiable that you may not even know are negotiable. Or there may be terms in that 20-page contract, even the self-publishing ones, that could be really harmful to you that maybe you could ask them to take out and they won't even care. You know, there's all these legal words that you probably mean nothing to you, but are really significant in the way that your relationship is going to work. So I definitely think the self-publishing is a good time to talk to a lawyer.
Well, and I think any contract in general, I'm thinking specifically, we have someone in Toolkits right now who I know is talking to you, Autumn, because someone got in touch with her, I think, to do some courses for like another website. And Kathleen and I also have been contacted to do something similar, where you are being asked to, you know, give content to their brand and, you know, what that looks like. I know in the online world, there's lots of trading of services and content, and like having you come speak to my crowd or having you give your products to my, you know, list, whatever that may be. And whenever there's a contract involved, get someone who knows what contracts are to read it through, because it, like whenever I first read a recent contract, I thought, oh, this is fine, and then Kathleen reads it and is, this is fucked up.
Yeah, like basically they were saying, we own your content, like you are work
oh
for
my
hire.
Gosh,
and I'm like, no, this is intellectual property without the $1 million patent,
right
that so, I'm not selling to you
or giving to you, basically.
Right. Yeah, or like affiliate agreements can be really tricky.
Yes, affiliate agreements, like contracted to give content, or like even like small client things. Or, and I said a second ago, whenever contracts are involved, but also when they're not involved, like it's just as sketchy and just as necessary to get a lawyer, I think, whenever, you know, people don't say, let's get a contract, just sort of having someone on call to say, like, hey, I'm thinking about doing this thing with this person, what do you think? And a lawyer who knows what they're doing is going to know when to tell you, you better get a contract, and what it should say.
Yeah. And the answer may be like, you're fine and you don't need to do anything. Or the answer may be, yeah, we need to look at this.
Right. Like I was about to say, I agree and I disagree, because for example, Emily, you and I went into Being Boss with zero contracts.
Right. Well, we knew each other too, which was really helpful.
All of our employees and contractors, zero contracts, because it's kind of been umbrellaed under our contracts through Indie Shopography and Braid Creative. And like, for example, if we did a project with Paul Jarvis and Jason Zook, like, we haven't really talked about a contract. I mean, it's kind of a handshake agreement. But I think because we trust those people.
Yes.
And that's the thing, too, is just kind of
go with your gut.
I was about to say this might be awful advice, like going with your gut. But if your gut's telling you something is shady, then yeah, have someone look over it.
Or run away.
Yeah, or run away.
Yeah, and we're not giving you legal advice either.
And Autumn, I'm curious with you, do you ever use your gut in law?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Well, and I was just to follow on what you were saying, you don't need a lawyer for every contract. I would be happy if you guys took a yellow pad with and just made, you know, a really simple outline of what your terms are going to be for any future collaborations with somebody else. And then everybody signs it. It doesn't always have to be that complicated. But it is nice if something goes wrong later to have at least the yellow pad that everybody signed that you can look back at that has the basic terms. But yeah, no, I use my gut all the time. And I, a lot of what we were talking about, like going after people who are copying your content or, you know, that kind of stuff is often just a gut check. Like, does this look right? Does this smell right? Is how close is it? Do I think there's anything that we're going to actually be able to get out of it? Like, is this a small mom and pop company that has no money and, you know, suing them is not going to accomplish anything? There's a lot where it's a very gray area.
You know, one piece of advice, Autumn, that you gave us recently is we noticed someone using our hashtag on Instagram.
Oh, right, right.
Kind of for their own benefit. And they're people that we like, but we were like, what is the deal? And you were like, listen, what are they taking away from you by using this hashtag? And I think that's such an important question is, what is someone else taking away from you? And I think it's a really important question to ask whenever you're feeling jealous or competitive or accusing someone of copying you or vice versa. What is being taken away? And unless you can answer that question clearly, I think you just need to check yourself.
Ooh.
And that's basically
and that's
what you
Kathleen
told us. Did. Yeah. Like Autumn was basically like, check yourself because you're getting in a tizzy about nothing.
And also just throwing out here, like in terms of copywriting, no one ever owns a hashtag. Like poor
Correct.
Girl boss. Like I feel like borderline really sad for her because she's potentially built this empire on something that she could never own.
I know.
Or maybe
and
that
I
was
even
totally
use,
her intention.
I even use girl boss.
Me too.
Oh, I do too. But you know, she's registered the trademark for it, so she's got some protection.
Has she? I didn't think you could do that.
Well, it's not the hashtag, but the word girl boss.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
Like it.
And we're in this whole weird, crazy time with Instagram and Twitter and, you know, people are borrowing stuff left and right and copyright and trademark law is trying to catch up. You know, these laws were written way before any of this was even imagined. So it's a brand new world and there are lots and lots of gray areas.
Yeah, I think it's just, again, picking your battles. And really choosing, you know, sometimes you're poisoning yourself more by getting upset about these things than any justice being served.
None of us have unlimited resources. So, I mean, if you had a legal budget of $1 million, like, could I go after all these people? Sure. But nobody has that budget. And so...
And even if you did. yeah, well, and I think this, like, goes right back to that don't be an asshole clause where... You know, have a good lawyer in your pocket because and I think that's really important. Whenever David and I moved to Chattanooga, I mean, we were in a point in our business where we knew we needed to get some lawyer things going, like some new contracts. We tried out one person. It did not work out well. Whenever we were moving to Chattanooga, we said we need to find a lawyer friend and a police officer friend, like just to sort of have these people in our, you know, just in case you never really know. And then no sooner than we move here, we get an email from Autumn. No, you signed up for New Orleans. That's
yeah,
what it
yeah,
was.
Yeah.
And I was like, lawyer boss in Chattanooga. Like you were sent to me by the baby angels. And I was really excited about it. But I cannot recommend enough to creatives out there and entrepreneurs or online business owners or whatever you want to call yourself, whatever it is that you're doing, to have a lawyer just sort of in your inbox, like make a quick acquaintance.
Or in your clubhouse.
Or in your clubhouse with a lawyer who gets what you do. And this is the same, like lawyers and accountants.
Having that is someone, so key. Someone that gets what you do.
Someone that gets what you do is really important because there are millions of lawyers out there. Like you could have your pick, but it's pretty rare when you find one who get what we do. And that's one of the things that like made me the most happy about knowing you, Autumn. Aww. Is that not only are you the lawyer that I was looking for and where I live, but you also get what I do, and that makes working with you so easy. So whatever it is that you're doing out there, find a lawyer and an accountant who understand your business, because you're wasting your money if they don't.
But also, don't be afraid of doing, like, kind of DIYing some of this stuff yourself, because for sure. It's also not as intimidating as you think it might be.
Oh, no.
So a little bit of both.
True that.
But Autumn, thank you so much for being such an active participant in our Facebook group and in our clubhouse, which you all can find at beingboss.club/clubhouse. It is so helpful to us creatives that can't quite or aren't quite ready to hire a lawyer, but it's so helpful just to know that. Just to have, you know, I'm not giving away your advice on our clubhouse or Facebook for free, but you really are an awesome, active participant. You're really generous with your knowledge, and thank you so much. And thank you for joining us on the show today and for helping us with all of our work. We just adore you.
Thanks. It's been super fun. And I love being in the clubhouse and in the Facebook group. It helps me know what issues are facing online entrepreneurs and creative entrepreneurs these days. So I can, you know, figure out how to best help them.
Where can our listeners find more of you?
Yeah, so I'm on the internet. My website is awbfirm.com. And then I've also got a Facebook page that you can just search Autumn Whit Boyd. And there's tons of free resources on my website. So if you are just getting started, that's a great place. I've got some videos and some free articles and things that will help you get started.
Yay, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you for listening to Being Boss. Please be sure to visit our website at beingboss.club, where you can find show notes for this episode, listen to past episodes, and discover more of our content that will help you be boss in work and life. Did you like this episode? Please share it with a friend and show us some love by leaving a rating and review on iTunes.
And if you're looking for a community of bosses to help take your creative business to the next level, be sure to check out our exclusive community at beingboss.club/clubhouse. where you get access to our closed and very vibrant Slack group, monthly Q&A calls with Kathleen and myself, a book club, and more. Cultivate your tribe and find your wolf pack at beingboss.club/clubhouse. Do the work, be boss, and we'll see you next week. I have one tiny request, Autumn, and if you can take your microphone away from your mouth just a little bit.
Oh, now it's
when
too
you get
close.
Really excited and talk, you yes. breathe into it.
Yep, sorry. And I'm like,
breathing is like the pregnancy.
I was about to say I'm also pregnant and like out of breath. So
I remember, like, I'm almost breathing for you because I remember that feeling of not being able to breathe.
Yeah, and I'll try and not talk so long either. It's easier.
Oh, no, you, please talk as long as you need and breathe as needed. We will, we can edit a lot of that
okay,
out. But
thank you.
God, I know. So you are going to have a baby really soon.
Yeah, I'm 38 weeks pregnant, so it's kind of any day now, although I'm hoping for one more week.
Wait, we have to go eat lunch first.
Okay. Okay, tomorrow.
What will you do if it's 4 more weeks?
Oh, gosh. Well, I talked to my doctor this week, and he doesn't want me to go past 41 weeks. So I have kind of a, like, end date, hopefully.
You have a timeline.
Yes.
Good.